Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the C-suite to state governments, a battle over voting rights.
We're coming off a really contentious election cycle, and we're seeing hundreds of bills proposed in states across the country.
We'll look into some of the legislation and what companies plan to do about it. Plus, a White House summit today to address the global chip shortage. And Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell shares his views on where the economy may be headed. It's Monday, April 12th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Voting rights have become a hot-button issue, including among business leaders. This weekend, dozens of CEOs and other senior leaders met on Zoom to discuss how they should respond to new voting laws proposed for Texas and other states, according to people on the call. WSJ's Emily Glazer has the details.
So there were more than 100 CEOs and other senior executives that joined this Zoom on Saturday afternoon with the express purpose of talking about voting rights. And in the beginning, there was a lot of background about what the Georgia legislation and other state legislation and bills include about whether or not they restrict voter access. And then Kenneth Chenault, the former CEO of American Express, longtime corporate board director, as well as Kenneth Frazier, CEO of Merck, really made their pitch to these CEOs and other business executives of what their new statement is going to say, how they believe it's nonpartisan, it's all about ensuring voter access for all, and really urged the CEOs to add their names. And so as part of the call, Kenneth Chenault told the executives that several companies had signaled that they would sign on, including PepsiCo, PayPal, T. Rowe Price, and Hess. So across industries, a lot of large companies. And, you know, what we heard from our sources is that even during this Zoom, CEOs of different companies like AMC and CyberCore Technologies were saying, I'm in, I'm in.
PayPal and the CEO for CyberCore Technologies confirmed they both support the statement. AMC, PepsiCo, T. Rowe Price, and Hess didn't respond to requests for comment. But Emily says, according to her conversations with business leaders, not all CEOs think that making a political statement about voting rights is the right move for their companies.
I think there's still a lot of CEOs that are worried about wading into political waters. We wrote a feature article this week. You know, the chairman of 1-800-Flowers.com, for instance, said they really don't like to express their point of view on political matters because they've got workers in 40 states that have a range of political views. He is not the only business leader that feels that way, but a lot of CEOs and other business leaders are scared of even saying that right now. So there are a lot of loud voices on these issues that are often Democratic or more left-leaning CEOs. But important to note that at least on this Zoom call, we know there were Republicans, Democrats, and leaders that identify as nonpartisan. So not everyone always spoke up, but there were a lot of different people of different political affiliations that joined the virtual gathering.
State lawmakers aren't the only ones taking up voting legislation. We'll have more on how this debate is shaping up in Washington later in the show. Senior business leaders are scheduled to meet with top White House officials today to discuss the global chip shortage, which has hobbled auto manufacturing and other industries. Among the attendees, executives from more than a dozen companies, including Ford, GM, and Intel. The Biden administration is hoping it can use the gathering as a platform to push its $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan, which includes a $50 billion investment in the American semiconductor industry. Protests broke out near Minneapolis Sunday after the death of a man who was shot by police at a traffic stop incident, the Associated Press reports. The AP says police say they were on the scene of a shooting in the Minneapolis suburb, but they have not released the person's identity. The shooting comes as the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, the man accused in George Floyd's death, continues today. And Hideki Matsuyama has become the first Japanese man to win one of golf's major championships after winning the Masters by one stroke. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says he's expecting the economy to pick up in the months ahead. On CBS's 60 Minutes on Sunday, he said output and job growth are set to speed up as long as the COVID-19 pandemic retreats. The Wall Street Journal recently surveyed other economists to get their perspectives. Let's bring in WSJ markets columnist Mike Bird. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mark.
Mike, based off of our conversations, what does the picture look like, not only in terms of size, but also the speed of growth?
So the economists we've spoken to, the people we've surveyed, have suggested that growth this year in the US is going to be about 6.4%. That will make it the fastest in almost 40 years. Now, a lot of that is for reasons that you might expect. A lot of the economy was physically locked down last year. People weren't allowed to spend on various sort of items. You know, eating out in a restaurant, for example, been very difficult through the last 12 months and more. So once you unlock those things, it's much easier to get that sort of rapid growth. I think one of the interesting questions beyond that, as you say, is the sort of size. How long can this go on for? Economists expect growth to slow down considerably the year afterwards. But it's the question of whether we're in the sort of midst of a multi-year boom, or whether this is a one and done, one big jump back towards activity, or whether it's going to be the series of a sort of prolonged growth episode.
And Mike, over and over again, we have discussed the risk of inflation. What's the feeling on this?
Yeah, so inflation is a really interesting thing here because it relates a lot to especially how markets and other parts of the financial industry are performing. The economists, again, we've spoken to, expect inflation to jump to about 3% in towards the middle of this year, then expect inflation to drop back down a little bit towards the end of the year. That is basically in line with what the Federal Reserve has been talking about. They expect a burst of inflation above the target of 2% this year, but then to fall back down. They're willing to look through that. They're not expecting to hike interest rates or tighten monetary policy generally in the face of a little bit higher inflation. They're willing to wait and see what happens. And yeah, that's basically what the economists expect too.
Mike Bird for us, thank you. Just ahead, a look at the different views surrounding voting rights in America after the break.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
Even though it's not an election year, voting rights legislation is increasingly becoming a political football. There are currently more than 350 different voting bills under consideration in dozens of states, according to a tally from the Brennan Center for Justice, a public policy think tank. Republican lawmakers across the country have proposed new limits for mail-in voting and other electoral changes, saying the proposals would improve election security. Civil rights groups and other critics of the state laws say they amount to voter suppression, especially for minority groups. There's also been a call for legislation on the national level. So could this become a battle between the states and the federal government? WSJ's Alexa Korse covers voting and elections and joins me from Washington. Thanks for being here, Alexa.
Thanks for having me on.
Alexa, let's start on the federal level. Democrats are backing a bill called the For the People Act. It was passed by the House as H.R. 1 and is headed to the Senate. What's the goal and what are the components?
Well, H.R. 1 is a huge bill, roughly 800 pages. It has provisions about voting, campaign finance, and ethics for government officials. There's a lot of focus right now on the parts about voting rules, and Democrats say the goal is to set minimum standards for access to voting across the country. Things like making sure every state offers early voting days, offers the option to vote by mail.
So the bill needs 60 votes to pass in the Senate, and Republicans are not on board. What are their objections?
Right. Well, Republicans are saying this is an issue that states should decide. States should be able to determine, you know, what specific rules and options make sense. They also say this is a partisan push to try to change the rules of the game. You know, Right now, this is a huge political battle. But one thing to keep in mind is you can't, you know, think about this bill without talking about the filibuster, which means that, you know, this bill would need 60 votes to pass the Senate. Some Democrat advocates are saying that maybe this is time to, you know, end the filibuster or create some kind of carve out for civil rights or voting rights legislation so that Democrats could pass the bill with their simple majority, you know, not needing to get 60 votes or Republican support. That would really shake up how things are done in the Senate. You know, that's a, you know, big controversial issue on its own. And that's all wrapped up in the future of this bill.
Are there areas, though, of agreement between Republicans and Democrats that could be formed or blended into some type of legislation? Or is it just that polarized?
Right. Well, you hear some people say, you know, this is a huge bill. Could we find something that's narrower? You know, Senator Joe Manchin, moderate Democrat from West Virginia, you know, he says he wants a bipartisan proposal and that he thinks that would be important for restoring confidence in the election system. We haven't seen kind of a specific bipartisan compromise come out yet.
As we mentioned, this bill is being debated on the heels of voting legislation passed in Georgia and a similar bill under consideration in Texas that critics say limits access to voting. Where else are we seeing voting legislation being taken up on the state level? And what kind of bills are in the works?
So we're coming off a really contentious election cycle, and we're seeing hundreds of bills proposed in states across the country. On the one hand, you know, maybe this is a good chance to take a look at lessons learned from all the changes we made around voting during the pandemic, propose some new bills. But, you know, critics say, and a big focus is that Republicans in many states are pushing legislation to tighten rules around absentee voting, which was really popular during the pandemic.
Alexa, is this ultimately going to become a debate over whether states or the federal government can regulate voting laws?
States have wide latitude to set voting rules. You know, that's why you need to know the rules for your state when you want to go vote. There's always been a tension over when the federal government needs to step in to make sure states aren't crossing a line, aren't disenfranchising, you know, particularly minority voters. An example of that is the Voting Rights Act from the 1960s. Another thing that's important to keep in mind is that context is everything here. A central complaint Democrats have is that Donald Trump pushed a false narrative of unproven fraud claims, and he says that's why he lost. You know, Democrats say Republicans are using those claims as a justification to pass new rules. So the question is there an actual problem, you know, that's trying to be solved, or is it messaging? And what are the consequences that could have for voters?
Alexa Corse joining us from Washington. Alexa, many thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, credit card companies are looking for new rewards to cater to younger customers. Instead of just collecting points for free flights or hotel rooms, future programs could help pay off bills. Here's the Journal's Amber Burton.
You know, rent is something that a lot of credit card companies have been trying to figure out how they can get into, because as of right now, you have to pay a fee if you're paying your rent with a credit card. But in addition to that, we know student loans, I mean, about 45 million Americans have about $1.7 trillion in student loans in the U.S. right now. That's a lot of debt. It's on a lot of people's minds. So more lenders are really considering, you know, how they can relate their rewards programs to that.
You can hear about the rest of the new reward programs on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for Monday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Glad you could start the week with us. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.